and welcome to Drinking Well, a podcast by Berry Brothers and Rudd with me, Barbara Drew. Today, I'm sitting down with Johan Bernard, one of our buyers, to discuss the Loire Cabernet Franc and what the future might hold for this rapidly evolving wine region. Johan, welcome.
Thanks, Barbara.
Before we get stuck into this fascinating wine region, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, and what your role is today?
So I'm French, even though most people don't really clock that in my accent. I lived around the world for my parents. I had to follow them, unfortunately. And I ended up in the UK in 2011 to do my studies and haven't really left apart from a little dip in Bordeaux for 2 years and back to London. Always been in the wine trade in terms of my professional years. And I joined Berry's 3 years ago and been here ever since as a sales, and I transitioned to a buying role a year and a half ago now.
And is the Loire the main region that you buy for? Do you buy for Bordeaux as well, or around the world?
I'm pretty multifacet in my buying. I started buying the Loire and launched the first campaign this year. It's really exciting. It's still a small region in terms of what we buy and what we sell, but the potential is great, as we're about to discover in this podcast.
You mentioned that we launched our first Loire campaign in November last year. Tell me a little bit about what that involves, putting together a campaign for a fine wine region. Why would we do that? And what's the benefit?
A lot of Excel spreadsheets. that's the first thing. This has been in the making for a few years now, thanks to Max and Adam, our other buying colleagues and director of buying. I think the main prospect of the Loire was that no one really did the Loire as a one block campaign. So of course there's a few growers throughout the UK wine trade that were represented and that had their own release, such as Dagenau or Cotta or even Philippe Allier. But what we wanted to do is to have a movement of the Loire and to really push the Loire as one block to have a bit more weight on the market and for people to really buy into it and understand the whole philosophy behind it. But I think in the past 5 years, we really started to see a movement from the growers themselves, which really excited us to really buy into it also. So I think it didn't really start with us. It really started with the growers, and then we're trying to mold something out of it to become market friendly and customer friendly. It's to really bring the region to the spotlight that it deserves, to be honest, and not single growers, but the region as a whole.
So more of a holistic approach.
Yeah.
So people can really see the region as a whole. Yeah. And explore it. We have touched on the Loire on this podcast previously. We had an episode in season 2 where we looked at the Loire. But something that we've not really done is delve into quite how complex this region is. So the Loire is often compared with Burgundy, and we'll chat a bit later on about what the similarities and possible differences are. But it's important to remember that Burgundy, there are two main grape varieties. We've got Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. Now, there are lots of villages, but at least just knowing where you are with the white grape and the red grape makes things a little easier. Now, the Loire is complex, it's fair to say. It's the longest river in France, and it's broken down into 4 main subregions, and within that, a huge variety of grapes. I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of Sauvignon Blanc, we've got Chenin Blanc, there's some Chardonnay planted there, we've got Pinot Noir, we've got Pinot d'Orny, we've got Cabernet Franc, we've got Melon, Cot, Malbec. What else have I missed?
You've already said some I didn't really know. So we really want to focus on the 3 main ones. I think everyone associates Loire to Sauvignon Blanc, Sancerre, Pouilly Fumé. That's kind of the oldest,
sort of the most recognized,
yeah, exactly.
I think, certainly in the UK.
It's visit card, basically. Yeah, I don't know how you say it in English.
But calling card.
Calling,
yes.
Card. But I think what we're trying to do now is to really show the Cabernet Franc side of the Loire and the Chenin Blanc. And those two great varieties shows its best in Anjou-Saumur and Touraine. So we're really starting to focus on those two regions. And we're still working with Sancerre and we're pushing Sancerre because there's some amazing wines. But I think the newest, let's say the new kids on the block, are the Cabernet Franc and the Sauvignon and the Chenin Blanc.
It's almost like the undiscovered heartland of the Loire. So if you follow the Loire River, you go north, and just where it turns west to start heading out to the ocean, You've got the central vineyards there. So that's your Sancerre, Puy-Fumé, beautiful white wines from Sauvignon Blanc. Also a little bit of Pinot Noir planted there as well, your red and your rosé Sancerre. As we head further towards the coast, we've got Touraine and we've got Anjou, Semur, and all of these appellations that our listeners may well be familiar with. We've got the Vouvray, that really classic Chenin Blanc region that makes beautiful sweet wines, beautiful dry wines, even sparkling wines. We've got the lovely reds of Bourgogne, Chinon, and then we get into the rich Savagnier, these sort of dry, full-bodied Chenin Blanc, Semur, Semur Champigny, and then finally, as you get out to the coast, that's where Muscadet, that light white wine, is made. If you're looking for something a little bit lower in alcohol, always a good shout. The only appellation in France where there's a limit on the alcohol, can't be more than 12%.
It's worth noting, just to understand how vast the region is. I mean, to go from Sancerre to Anjou-Saumur, it takes more than 3 hours by car. So it's Sancerre is right next to Chablis. It makes more sense to visit Sancerre when you go to Burgundy than it does when you go to Loire region. It really goes from the coast all the way south of Paris, basically. It's very big.
And a real diversity then of climates. You've obviously got the coastal influence for your Muscadet, but as you head further inland, very, very different climate effects, much more continental, much drier, but more issues with frost and so on. Exactly. So a real variety, and of course, different soil types as well. Whilst it is one region, the complexity here is quite astounding. Now, as a complete wine nerd, I would say that's what makes it fun, but appreciate that those who are just dipping their toe in the water of the Loire might find that a little overwhelming.
Which makes a campaign on it even more complicated, especially with how the growers are starting to create new styles, especially Cabernet Franc. They're doing much longer élevage, so they're releasing wines at times that they feel they can release their wine. So you have many different vintages releasing every year. You can't really do a one vintage campaign like we do in Bordeaux or Burgundy. It's more you follow a grower, and when it releases, you go into it. It's a multi-vintage campaign. You look at the style instead of the vintage. It's the style of wine per grower.
That's really interesting. As you say, those who have perhaps started their fine wine journey in Bordeaux, they will know that the next vintage coming up, we will be looking at 2023 Bordeaux, and everything that you read will be about that specific vintage and the characteristics that has given to the wine. But here you're saying actually the impact of the grower is as, if not more important than weather conditions in a particular year.
They're as important, let's say. It's really because every single grower will have their own style. And we're seeing that more and more nowadays from the Loire compared to other places. You kind of see it in Burgundy also with some growers that are doing Vin de France, but are still placed in amazing parts of Burgundy, but they want to do their own style. But usually just follow the appellation because, I mean, it's easier to sell anyways. But the Loire, since they're really coming from, I'm not going to say from nowhere, but in terms of market presence, they don't have anything to follow up on. So they can really just start doing their own winemaking and own style. It's really changed in the past 5 years, I must say. That's really the turning point. And you're seeing longer élevage. That's one of the main change for Cabernet Franc. Some are aging their Cabernet Franc for 24 months in large oak barrels, 500 liters, minimal new wood. So the Cabernet Franc really has time to integrate with the wood and very soft tannins. So it's not at all austere as we're used to. It's very approachable, long aging wines. It's a unique style because usually you don't really see that approachability in wines that can age 20 plus years. It's amazing for cellars because you can drink now or keep it for decades.
Traditionally for Cabernet Franc in the Loire, some of our listeners, they might be familiar with the Bourgogne, the Chinon. They tend to be, I would call them the crunchier styles. You have this lovely fresh red fruit character and wonderful acidity. Cabernet Franc is this grape that gives you this lovely fresh acidity, often a slightly herbal note as well. And for me, that's what I associate most with those particular regions. And then the Semur Champigny, please can you pronounce that? Because you do a much better job of it than me.
Semur Champigny.
Much better. They tend to be the wines, again, I've often associated them with being a little bit more savoury, a little bit more tannic structure, really have potential for ageing. But what we're seeing is a change in that style and almost showing the true potential of Cabernet Franc. I feel that sometimes it's the overlooked little brother, certainly has been in Bordeaux. Cabernet Franc is perhaps perhaps not used as much as it should be, in my personal opinion, because it can be such a charming grape when it's in the hands of someone who really knows how to bring out its potential.
It shows how the growers really have a vision, because not many in the world can do single varietal Cabernet Franc and do it in a successful way, in an approachable way, and a long-term aging way. Hats off to the growers that are doing it, because Bordeaux haven't been doing it because, well, they had, of course, Cabernet Sauvignon to play with, Merlot also, but they're the first to really unlock the potential of single varietal Cabernet Franc, which I think puts them on the map, in my opinion. But yeah, I think it's still a young phase. They're still experimenting with different techniques, different barrels, different aging, fermenting and aging vessels. It's not like Bordeaux, where they've been doing it for 20 years the same way, 50% new wood, 50% second wood. Of course, some explore a bit more, but the Loire is all about exploring. Year on year, they're just changing. They're putting some of their grapes aside just to do experiments on what can work for the future. That makes us think there's something to be had here, because everyone's sharing knowledge in the Loire region. We want to understand what they're doing,
yeah.
to look at opportunities to go forward. And we want also to share all knowledge about the market and how it can be better received.
Definitely.
From a customer point of view.
It's interesting you talk about experimentation. Is it fair to say grapes have been grown in the Loire for many hundreds of years? So the grape and the site, do you think that they're matched and it's simply a case of producers experimenting in the winery? Or do you think that there's actually still work to be done and experimentation around which grapes are best suited to which parts of the Loire?
Seeing the soil compositions of the two main regions we're really focusing on, Anjou-Saumur and Touraine, there are very few that are experimenting in different varietals on the different soils. Some are making Chenin for the first time because that's what's hot on in the moment. There are some people doing new cuvées, but usually they're flagship cuvées, and the one they really want to push and make their flagship wines, usually it's pretty old vines, either Cabernet Franc or Chenin. It's the winemaking they're experimenting. And of course, in the vineyards, they're experimenting in terms of vineyard management. They're mostly all organic or biodynamic. I think it's one of the regions where most growers are.
That's crazy. I mean, the weather is getting a little warmer, but that doesn't mean that it's any easier. Warmer weather simply means that your vines have got more buds on them when the frost hits, and there's even more damage when there's a torrential thunderstorm late in the summer. So surely being organic or biodynamic is risky.
It is, but I think what they want to do with their wines is create the best wine they can. I think they have less pressure in terms of delivering a certain amount of wine or a certain amount of, let's say, turnover for company. They're all proper farmers, which have been farming the land for decades or even centuries for some. I mean, apart from Domaine Closier, which he just came in. But I mean, the estate has been there for ages. So it's the context is completely different. And they're just having fun, to be honest, having sat with them. Dinners and lunches. There's still young kids discovering new ways of making wine. The knowledge is just constant flow of knowledge between them. So that's what's amazing. They didn't know each other before, and now they created their little circle of winemaking knowledge, which is great.
That's so lovely. Almost this historic region, which is being revived with new investment, new experimentation. It puts me in mind almost of Priorat. And actually, what can we do with these brilliant old vines, with this brilliant terroir? How do we bring that to life? How do we reinvent our winemaking? How do we push the envelope to make wines which are delicious or age-worthy and just rethink it all?
And I think we also have a part to play in it and to push these wines the way they deserve to be put in the spotlight. There's going to be a lot of work behind the scenes across the range for this to become really a spotlight region. But the wines are there. The quality is there. It's just how can we make these go on the market in the best possible way?
We support them by buying them and drinking them, don't we?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Small farmers, they really need to be selling everything that they make so that they've got that income so they can keep investing and experimenting. So you've brought along a bottle today, which I am very excited to taste. Again, I will let you read out the name so that it's pronounced perfectly. Tell us what you've brought for us to taste.
It's Domaine des Closiers. The cuvée is called Les Coudrets 2022. So it's the mid-range of Anatole's full range.
And Anatole is the winemaker, the owner?
Winemaker, owner, grower. He's not a one-man band. He also has a winemaker helping him, but he's in every single decision. 2 years ago, he did a full revamp of the estate, brand new facilities. If you've ever been in the Loire, you know how all these estates are basically in the tufo. They're dug in the tufo.
So the tufo is sort of like a chalky rock almost, yeah. And the cellars are literally dug out of this in the ground.
And usually the vines are on top. So it's a very efficient way because you just put the grapes down to your cellar. What's great about the estate is that it's been rebought. It was an estate that was kind of losing its panache, and he saw the potential in the vines, and he bought a lot of different parcels around his winery. He's making superb wines. I think he's one of the next big Saumur Champigny grower to look out for.
Well, you've sold it to me. Let's have a taste. Oh, the color just looks so delicious.
The freshness is quite crazy for a Saumur Champigny. You're not used to this sort of freshness from the glass when you're talking about Loire Cabernet Franc.
It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, the word that springs to mind when I smell this is the fruit is very glossy. There's something very polished here. And I don't mean that in a, you know, in a negative way at all, but just really pure, ripe, but not overripe. A mix of black fruit, red fruit, a little bit of spice. You can tell that this has aged in oak, but very, very well integrated. Certainly not overpowering the wine. But there's a beautiful ripeness here. It's just so charming.
You feel also the chalkiness through on the nose also. I think that's what the freshness is, the chalkiness of the soils.
I often hesitate to use the word minerality because it has so many different meanings. But there is that, as you say, that non-fruit character, which is just lovely.
Many of the growers that have wineries in the Tufo, they call it their cathedral. Because when you enter their wineries, usually you go through a tunnel and you arrive at this spot where it's just basically a cathedral. You have 10 meters of ceilings and you're in a huge cave with barrels just lined up. And the wines are in its place in this cathedral. But you enter it and you're just in awe. They deserve to be there.
Their own special place of reverence.
Yeah.
With my somewhat rusty French, there's an interesting note on the label of this wine suggesting where the name of this domain comes from, about specifically winemakers or vignerons who work within the walled vineyards. Is that correct?
So L'Éclosier is in French, well, it's not a current French saying, but in the time, L'Éclosier were the people that worked in the vineyards. You have lots of little holes in the tufo where they usually had their picnics while they were taking the grapes, or they even slept there sometimes. I really enjoy the name, and I'm happy he kept the name, because when you buy an estate, usually you do want to do a rebranding and put yourself in front, but he really kept the traditions alive.
I mean, this is a beautiful wine, and this is an estate that we're particularly excited to represent. So this is the 2020, and this is the second vintage that Anatole has made here. So tell me a little bit about how you go about finding wines with this potential, and how you can say, yeah, brilliant, this is a wine that's going to age for 20 years, and this is absolutely an estate that's got star power.
A lot of it is the chit chat that we hopefully hear in the region, and sometimes you miss it and you miss a good opportunity, but it's a lot of, as we say in French, bouche à oreille, and you just
kind of mouth to ear.
Yeah, mouth to ear. If you hear something, go taste it, see what it's all about. There's a lot of chit chat about Domaine des Closiers, because the Foucault family, which is from Clos Rougeard, of course, Clos Rougeard has been, it's a new owner since 2017.
For those who might not be familiar with this estate, so in wine circles, it's a bit of an icon wine, but it's actually quite difficult to get hold of. So many of our listeners might not have tasted it. Can you give us a little overview of what Clos Rougeard is, why it's so special?
So Clos Rougeard is kind of this, well, it was a unicorn wine in the day. Now people know more about it.
Unicorn in the sense that occasionally you might hear about it, but nobody's ever actually seen a bottle in real life.
Exactly that. They make 100% Cabernet Franc. They also have a Chenin cuvée, but they're known for their Cabernet Franc. And they were one of the biggest names in the Loire. So the Foucault family, which owned the estate, did a great job to make Cabernet Franc to a level we've never seen before, and to really express the terroir from the Saumur Champigny region. They're kind of the pioneers of what Cabernet Franc can become. A lot of growers see them as
like the North Star.
Exactly, the North Star. And Anatole is close to the Foucault family, so they've had lots of chats about how to make the best Comte de France they can. That's already a great sign when they're associated to the right people. They're sharing the bottles with the right people. That's why we're very keen on trying and meeting Anatole, and the wine speaks for itself. And I think it's one of the most popular growers in our campaign. We're excited to see where it's going.
From tasting this wine, it has all of the ingredients of a real classic fine wine. The fruit is, it's ripe, it's well judged. The tannins, there's a lot of structure there. So tannin is something that a wine needs to help it age, but it also needs the density of fruit and sort of complexity of flavors behind that. The acidity is beautiful, woven through the wine, but without overpowering it. Everything is perfectly in balance, and there's just so much flavor there waiting to be revealed. I would happily leave this for 20 years and enjoy drinking it when those two decades have elapsed.
If you can wait that long, that's the issue.
Indeed, as you mentioned, the fruit here means that this is really charming now. And in fact, it also feels quite sort of fresh. So it's 14% alcohol, but you really wouldn't know that from tasting it. It feels very well balanced, very light.
It's light on its feet, yeah. Especially the med palate's very lifted. It's very enjoyable now. But as you say, in 20 years' time, it's going to completely change profiles. That's what's great about it, is that we don't really know how this new kind of Comte de France will evolve through time. It can only be in a good way. I mean, if we drink 20-year-old Comte de France right now from the 90s or even early 2000s, the style won't be the same. It's lovely, but it's the precision of the winemaking wasn't there 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And now it is here. So we're seeing much less faults in the winemaking. And a lot of the issues that was associated with Comte de France from the Loire was kind of this barnyardy smell and taste, and how that could overpower the freshness. But yeah, Now in the last 5 years, that's not an issue at all. I think it's going to evolve in a much different way, in a better way.
We know that lots of people do enjoy wines when they've got a slightly savoury character to them and a little bit of a barnyardy character, but really excessive barnyard aromas, or quite sort of horsey aromas in the wine, that can be due to a fault called Brettanomyces. And it can, as you say, it can really overpower a wine. It can detract from the fruit. It can sort of hollow out the wine and make it feel a little bit angular, and can be quite unpleasant. So good winemaking should absolutely be able to avoid that. But to me, I mean, your point, it's in some ways what we've seen happen in Bordeaux over the past 30 years. If you taste a 30-year-old Bordeaux now, it's delicious, but it was made in a very different environment to the environment in which producers are making Bordeaux today. And yeah, they will age differently. The modern wines will almost definitely age better. So we say better winemaking, better quality of fruit. But it's important to just have that in the back of your mind, that things were very different 30 years ago. And so the evolution of modern wines will be a touch different.
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone's looking forward to discovering how they're going to age. I personally bought a lot during the campaign, a bit too much, I think. But I bought a lot because I know I need something to drink now and in 20 years' time. So I want to have the same wine. I want to experience it young and old. It's one of those you really have to experiment yourself also on the drinking side, because you just take Bordeaux or Burgundy, you know when to drink it, depending on your taste. The new style of Loire wines, you don't know so much how it's going to evolve. So you have to constantly dip in your cellar and try and see how the wines evolve.
So talking about sort of experimentation, traditionally, some of the French wine regions, and indeed other wine regions, certainly within Europe, have not been very open to experimental winemaking. I can think of Sancerre and Puy-Fumé, some of the most highly sought after producers, Dagenais, Cotta. Their wines were sometimes deemed to be too unusual, too atypical, and they weren't even allowed to be labelled with the name of the appellation. Do you see that happening elsewhere in the Loire as more producers experiment? Do you think actually it doesn't matter whether it's an Anjou, whether it's a Savagnin, or whether it's a Bourgogne, because these terms, they're too outdated?
I think the terms are outdated, but the restrictions of the AOC aren't too restrictive for certain appellations. For others, such as Puy-Fumé, as we've seen with Alexandre Bain, they are restrictive, but I think Puy-Fumé and Sancerre has a much more global image to sustain, so it makes more sense. But when we're talking about Bourgueil. It's pretty rare that you see Bourgueil across the globe, but some of the best Bourgueil being made right now is from Domaine du Bel Air, from Pierre Gauthier and his son Rodolphe and his daughter also. And they're making some groundbreaking Cabernet Franc from a region which you would never really suppose would make that style of wine. So his flagship is called Clos Nouveau. I mean, it's one of the most complex Cabernet Franc in the world, in my opinion, and many think the same. And it comes just from a single Clos, which he bought 2004, if I recall. Don't quote me on that. Funny story how he bought it. It was a candle auction. The way it works is they light a candle and you get back and forth bids. And when the candle's done, it's the last bid that stands.
Wow.
It's very old school. And he got the parcel like that. And he knew the parcel had potential because it was an old parcel that the church used to own, and they already made grew grapes there. So he knew there was potential. And to be honest, it's one of the only clos in Bourgueil.
So a clos is specifically a walled, enclosed vineyard.
You're in this tiny village where he has his winery, and suddenly you just have four big walls, and they're pretty tall. You can't really see inside. And there's just a 1.2 hectare of Cabernet Franc perfectly laid out. He redid everything, and it's one of the most prized vineyards in the Loire Valley, and if not the world. The secondary market goes crazy for it. It's impossible to get. You can only find it on restaurants listing. In my opinion, it's one of the most exciting Bourgueil, Cabernet Franc in the Loire, which is not restrained by the appellation because he's making wines in the appellation norms, because the appellation is pretty flexible. But then that's Cabernet Franc. I think there's less scope in terms of style that you can make a Cabernet Franc compared to a Chenin or a Pouilly Fumé. I think the reds are less affected by the appellation compared to the whites. And that's something we're seeing mostly in Savinière and more on the Anjou Noir part of Anjou Saumur, which is, if you say it's on the west coast, west side of the appellation. And that's when growers are really starting to do some really cool Chenin Blanc, which aren't really representative of the appellation because they're doing styles that have never been seen before. Savinière in particular, that's where we're seeing the most style change. In terms of appellation regulation, they can still label it Savinière. So I think the appellations are pretty happy to evolve alongside the growers because they're building a brand also.
Yeah.
That's not the same case in, for the Sauvignon Blanc in Sancerre and Pouilly Fumé. So I think there are two different movements in the Loire, and the most changing movement is the one in Anjou Saumur and Touraine.
It's really interesting because you have the question of how much does the appellation where you grow and make your wines, how much does that support you as a producer? And Sancerre is a great example. If you have Sancerre on your bottle, then consumers all over the world, they know pretty much what they're getting. They trust it. They know it's good quality. But at the same time, that can stifle innovation. And certainly if we look to Tuscany, for example, we saw decades ago with the Super Tuscan movement that actually producers said, no, I don't want to label my wine as Chianti. It's too restrictive. I don't think I can get the quality or the style that I want. I'm going to step outside the appellation. And that has worked out very well for Tuscany. And I just wonder, as the Loire is still really building its name around the world, whether it will benefit producers from staying within these appellations, or actually whether it's simply the producer name that you need to know, and it doesn't matter if they're Bourgogne or if they're Vin de France or whatever.
I think it's going to be mixed, but I think the latter right now is what we're seeing the most. I think the growers, they're not limiting themselves to the appellation. It's not a big thing, let's say. A lot of growers have no issues just labeling their wine Vin de France and just out of the whole spectrum of the appellation, because they're just having fun in terms of experimenting and trying to find the style that suits them and their terroir. So it's not the same prejudice compared to Bordeaux or Burgundy, where it's very, very strict and you want to put it on the bottle, the appellation you're in. Here it's just, let's just make the best wine we can, and then the market will come to it. Usually it's the other way around. Usually it's the market that kind of curates the style of wine the growers are making. But here it's the growers that are making their own style, and hopefully the market will react well to it. That's where we come in also to basically promote the different styles of the growers we think have potential and are already making outstanding wine. The inverse image that we see in other regions. As you say, the appellations are, they also want to grow their brand. There's a lot of creating new appellations,
actually.
And there's a lot of that going on. And
brilliant, making a complicated region even more complicated.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic, always a great idea.
I think it's really interesting because the whites and the reds have two different trajectories, but they're all mixed together in terms of growers speaking to each other and of understanding what they're doing and how they can replicate for the Cabernet Franc. And you have this movement that's being created as we speak and that's growing. So you have key players in the Loire that have created what we call La Paulet d'Anjou now.
So a bit like the Burgundian.
Exactly.
This
would never happen in the past, but now I think it's a new generation. There's new possibilities, and they decide to create this movement. They meet up every year for a big tasting, a big dinner, and it's only growers that have this mentality.
Yeah.
And the mentality is, what can we do next in terms of wine style, in terms of being organic, because you have to be organic or transitioning to organic to be part of the Paulet d'Anjou. And it's amazing to see. There's no competition basically between them. The competition is getting the Loire up to a level that they all benefit from. And you have key growers that are really pushing in that direction and helping this come to fruition.
An exciting time to be watching the Loire, I think.
And not enough time to watch it. You would have to be there nonstop to really
capture everything. So tell me, which bottle in your cellar are you most looking forward to opening, whether that's in 10 or 15 years from the Loire?
Can I choose two?
Yes.
Pinot Nouveau that we spoke about previously. That's something I want to not open now and really see how it evolves. And it's a Bourgogne, so who would have thought I was going to keep a Bourgogne for 20 years in my cellar. And the other is from Philippe Allier. It's a wine called Coteau de Noiret. It's 100% Chinon. So we didn't really touch on the Chinon appellation yet. And to be honest, Chinon's the largest Cabernet Franc appellation there is in the Loire. So it's good that we mention it. And I think it's one of the best plots in Chinon. South-facing plot, pretty high up, looking on the river. And he's making wines that are next level. He's really pushing the winemaking to an extent that we've seen a change in the past 2-3 years. You see it year on year. The wines are changing in terms of quality and precision. So, and that's also the new generation that took over. He's called Pierre Allier. He's making some great changes to the estate. The terroir was there, and now he's just bringing it out. Those will be the two.
And can you ever see a point in the future where Loire will outnumber Bordeaux in your cellar?
I think it already does, to be honest. I do like my Bordeaux, but don't collect it per se. I'm more a Burgundy and an awkward wine collector, basically. The Loire will become prominent in my cellar. It already is, and especially from this campaign. But I really want to look at it now, because I think in 10 years' time, it will be much more difficult to get a hand on the bottles that we're selling now. That's my take. Buy now and be thankful later.
Wise words, indeed. Thank you so much, Johan. That's been absolutely fascinating. And thank you for bringing along this delicious bottle. The joy of opening it up is that I can see it's going to evolve beautifully over the next couple of days. To be honest, now it's open, so there's no hurry to finish the bottle.
No, it will definitely stand its ground. They're not wines that are easily affected by oxidation. So you can open it now, finish it tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Drinking Well, a podcast by Berry Brothers and Rudd. If you'd like to browse the producers mentioned in today's podcast, visit bbr.com/podcast. Or if you're interested in starting your own fine wine collection with Berry Brothers and Rudd, all the information you need can be found on bbr.com/collecting. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you again for listening. I'm off to hunt down some more Cabernet Franc. Cheers!